with Web Talk at webtalkradio.com, and this is the week of October 2nd, 2004, and my name is Rob Greenlee, and thank you for checking us out from around the world. We do the best to keep you plugged into the latest net trends and some of the coolest internet-connected devices and software, right?
And this is Dana. I'm the other part of the us of Web Talk Radio. Wow, we had quite an eventful day yesterday.
Yes,
Rob
was
working at the computer, per usual, and looked out the window and noticed there was a cloud. And, of course, his omnipresent television on CNN was broadcasting that Mount St. Helens was erupting.
Yes, there were some big steam explosions around the lava dome, which Dan and I have actually hiked and climbed on in the past,
well,
years ago.
It three times up to the abbreviated rim, of course.
Well, Dana's hiked right in the same spot where the mountain erupted.
Well, you do. We both actually have been part of the USGS sort of Glacial Speleological Society. We got to go into ice caves and stuff on the dome. That was cool. And
you know
what?
We're not geologists.
No, we're not. We just had the certificate. And I don't think those ice caves are probably there anymore right now.
No, I think they're kind of blown apart.
We got to tie this into the web. There's a website that you can watch Mount St. Helens doing its little dance.
Actually, there's a link to it right off our website at webtalkradio.com.
Okay.
There was a new website that launched, actually, it's a search engine that launched this week, and it's really cool. You should go check it out. It's at clusty.com. It's got all the buzz going on around the internet, and it basically clusters search results. It's a little bit different. Check out our website every day or every couple days for
every hour.
Well, yeah, for blog postings, which I'm posting up there, the breaking web news for what's happening around the web. So just you can even subscribe to our RSS feed right there.
We have a packed show this week. We have three guests on. This is going to be a lot of information.
On the show this week, we're going to hear from, just like Dana said, three experts. And one's going to talk about whether email marketing has a future. And we're going to speak with Don Pickering, who's the founder and CEO of Momentic Systems.
What people have learned over the last several years is how to use technology for more refined targeting and one-to-one marketing with their campaigns. That helps to increase response rate and reduce people opting out of permission-based email relationship.
Later in the show, we'll explore the future and the growth of RSS syndication. RSS, that's Real Simple Syndication. There's a newsreader company out there called NewsGator. And we'll speak with Greg Rinneker, founder and chief technology officer for NewsGator at NewsGator.com.
Numbers about how many weblogs there are, how fast that's growing. So kind of the numbers we see in that neighborhood are, I think, 6 to 7 million weblogs growing by, you know, somewhere around 10,000 a day. It's amazing.
On October 5th through the 7th, the Web 2.0 conference will be held featuring some of the leading people and companies driving innovation in the internet economy. And the conference will debut with a theme of the web as a platform. It's going to explore how the web has developed into a robust platform for delivering all sorts of media and communications tools. On the line with us to talk about Web 2.0 is John Battelle, who's the founder of Web 2.0 at web2con.com. And John is the program chair for this year's Web 2.0 conference. And he's also the founder and editor of Wired Magazine and is a former chair of the Standard Media International, which published the industry standard. And he also has a web blog at battellemedia.com. John, thanks for joining us on the show.
Oh, thanks for having me again.
Now, the name Web 2.0, it really kind of brings up a lot of thoughts on what the topic for that might be. And it seems like the evolution of the internet may be part of that name, where we're kind of stepping into the next phase of the World Wide Web. Is that kind of what you're trying to do here?
Yeah, exactly. Try to say what you mean when you name something. You can.
Yeah.
I think that most folks will, you know, who were around in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, would acknowledge that we're in a new phase of the web. The web is much more robust. It's much more of a platform that can be counted on and developed on top of. You know, after the bust, we've seen an emergence of a multitude of new business models, of new opportunities, and I would say a lot more opportunity than we had in the Web 1.0 era, sort of pre-bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that kind of rolls into the idea that we're in the second major phase of the build-out of the web. So that's why we named the conference Web 2.
Well, it certainly makes a lot of sense. Now, the whole Web 2 concept, I got the impression of, you know, by looking at the sessions and things, that you're really thinking that the next generation of the web is really going to involve a lot of media, it seems like, you know, new forms of media distribution and those type of things. Would that be an accurate kind of observation from a higher level?
It's one of the major trends. We have several that sort of cross throughout the program. One of them certainly has to do, or you might say that this one runs throughout each trend, which is that the web is a medium.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you sort of recognize that, then you realize that, you know, almost every business, no matter what business they're in, is also in the media business. Because mm-hmm. if you don't have a web presence, a mediated software-based, customer-centric area on the web, if you don't have that media experience,
mm-hmm.
you're probably not going to do very well in this world today. So the web is a medium, and I think that that's why there's so much media in our program. On the other hand, there are a lot of other really interesting themes running through it that are not driven directly by media, which,
mm-hmm.
You know, the idea of how you run your business as a platform business, how you let your customers build your business using the web as a platform to build businesses, which is something that the leaders of the web have done really successfully over the last few years. Some really interesting new companies that are going to be launching in interesting areas of endeavor, like software development and platforms and tools. So there's a lot going on, and we're trying to cover a broad waterfront.
Cool. Why don't you run through for us kind of a list of some of the speakers you're going to have, because that really points out kind of what your focus is from a content standpoint for this.
Sure. I mean, we've got some very well-known names, and we've got some what you might call, you know, returning stars, you know, folks who started companies in the mid to late 90s who are starting new companies now. And we've got a lot of really exciting entrepreneurs who maybe they didn't get Business Week famous, so to speak, but they are really smart, really innovative people doing interesting things. So the first day, some of the highlights are we'll have Jeff Bezos and John Doerr. Bezos, of course, runs Amazon and is one of the more successful entrepreneurs of both eras. And Amazon is an incredible platform company that's being built by its own customers now with its recommendation systems and its market platform, where it's allowing other companies to plug into its platform. John Doerr, of course, was one of the most successful VCs in the world and on the board of Google and was one of the early investors in Google. And then we're having a dinner with Mark Cuban, who founded Broadcast.com and sold it for billions of dollars to Yahoo and Web 1.0.
Speaking of a guy that's moving aggressively into the media side of things, right?
Very much. He's starting a company in the high-definition space. He also has a reality television show.
Yeah, that's true.
And owns the Dallas Mavericks, so he's got his fingers in a lot of different pies.
Well, he got $1 billion a few years ago, didn't he? So,
yep. And so he's got, you know, he's doing interesting things with it, and so we'll be having a dinner with him, and that'll be fun. Throughout the program, we're having these things that I call Hired or Bits, which are short presentations by interesting people on topics that amaze. And, for example, in the first day, Bill Gross, who founded Overture, which was sold for $1.3 billion to Yahoo, is announcing a new company, a new search engine company, in one of those Hired or Bits. And so when a guy who's built something like Overture is doing it again, I find that pretty interesting. The next morning, Joe Krause, who was one of the founders of Excite, is announcing his new company. Gosh, there's just so many people. Mark Andreessen, the founder of Netscape, Dan Rosenzweig, who's the number two at Yahoo, and Jerry Yang, one of the founders of Yahoo, will be coming and speaking. Mary Meeker, who's a major analyst out of Morgan Stanley, who was one of the principal figures of the first era, the bubble era, and is now, I think her stocks were up 75% last year.
Yeah, it's amazing that you've been able to pull all these guys together into one place. I don't know if that's ever been done before.
Not with this breadth. I did conferences in the late 90s and through 2001 while I was at the industry standard that were similar, but I don't think as deep and as broad as this one. We've even got Danger Mouse, who is well known for the Grey album, which caused a worldwide protest around the internet when EMI, the music company that owns the White Album, right from the Beatles, protested his music. So we've got a really interesting mix.
So let's kind of talk about some of the other major themes that you think are going to come out of this. Now, when you get a group of people like this together, there's going to be some interesting discussions that come from that. What are you hoping to actually get from this conference? I mean, getting these kind of thought leaders together into one spot.
There's a number of things. I think that a conference is an opportunity to declare a place and time.
Yeah.
And for our industry, the internet industry, we have been beaten up a lot from late 2000 through 2003, and there wasn't really a mood within the industry that we needed to get together.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, there were many people who felt like they were kind of just keeping their heads down and hoping no one would slap them again.
Mm-hmm.
And I think things have changed quite dramatically, and the internet is really interesting again. We've learned our lessons, and we're moving on. And so I think getting together in one place at one time to discuss a lot of the major issues around our industry is a catalyzing experience for those involved, and that's one of the main reasons that I think a conference is important. And there's some very interesting and important issues to be discussed around intellectual intellectual property, for example, distribution of content and media, standards around software platforms, open source, you know, Microsoft, web OSs around Google or Yahoo and others. There's a lot of really interesting, exciting things going on. Search, of course.
Yeah.
And so it provides an opportunity for a lot of hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of catalyzing conversations in the hallways and at dinner and during cocktail parties, as well as the one main conference conversation that will be going on for 3 days.
So who is actually going to be there? I mean, we talked about the speakers. Yeah, I would think that the people that actually just go to the conference would be just as important probably as the people that are speaking, I would think.
Yeah, I think in a lot of cases that's absolutely true. We have about 500 registered attendees so far. It's quite a list. A lot of entrepreneurs, I'd say, you know, if you were to put them in big buckets of types of folks, you've got a big group of entrepreneurs who are starting companies. You've got a big group of people who work at larger internet-related companies who want to keep their finger on the pulse of what's going on.
Yeah.
And then you've got a big group of people who are in financial services and in other kinds of services that are involved in the industry, like executive recruiters, bankers, venture capitalists, consultants, and so on. And you've got a big group of press who wants to know, okay, where's this story going?
Sure.
And of course, we've got a big group of bloggers.
Yeah. Well, so, of course, you got to have the bloggers.
Got to have the bloggers.
Yeah. Speaking of blogging, what other ways can, like, maybe a person that maybe can't actually attend physically be able to keep track of kind of the discussions? Is there going to be any wikis or blogs that are focused specifically on the discussions of the conference, or is it going to be?
On the website, we'll be updating the website post-conference. We will not be doing it during the conference just because we'll be so focused on the conversation. However, there will probably be at least 30 or 40 blogs that are covering this in real time. And I am entirely sure that within the first hour of the conference starting, somebody, if not me, somebody will gather all those threads together in one place so that you could watch whatever is said about Web 2.0 from one centralized blog or feed. And if you're a sophisticated blog user and you have an RSS aggregator, all you need to do is subscribe to a RSS feed out of Feedster or something like that under the title Web 2.0, and it'll search for any mention of that and bring you back all the good stuff from the various bloggers who are in the room.
So do you think that the whole blogs and the whole syndication of the RSS platform is a major significant trend with what's happening with the web and the internet and how information is being distributed?
Yeah, I think it is. And the reason I do is because it's not one-dimensional. I think the initial understanding of this phenomenon was that it was one-dimensional, that it's sort of, oh, well, there's one guy in his pajamas, you know, saying whatever he wants to say. There's a lot more to it, in my opinion, than just that. That there is the ability for that voice to command a significant audience because of its authenticity and integrity. There's the fact that the business models are incredibly lightweight, so you can generate audiences of hundreds of thousands of readers without incurring significant overhead and cost.
Yeah.
And there's the conversational part of this, which allows for people to roll up sort of their own conversations and get smart on something quick and join the conversation and really feel informed. And I think it is incredibly healthy for the Republic, basically, to have a forum for this kind of conversation.
Well, let's talk about how a listener might fly down to San Francisco and actually attend this event. Is there a process they need to go through, a registration?
I appreciate that.
Yep.
Sure, we still have a little bit of room.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is to register on the website, because the price on the website is going to be the best price until the day of, and then the price gets steeper. So between now and Tuesday, the website, which is web2con, web2con.com, is the best place to register. Once you get on there, you'll see an easy registration button push. And if you do just show up in San Francisco, we'll be able to take care of you there as well.
And that's October 5th through the 7th, right?
That's right. Starting in the morning on the 5th at the Hotel Nico in San Francisco.
That's great. Well, John, thanks for joining us on the show. It was great to speak with you again.
Oh, you're most welcome, and thank you for your interest.
We've just been speaking with John Battelle. You can find out more about Web 2.0 at web2con.com. Thanks so much for our faithful sponsor, InfoCreek.com. They put together our new website. We're very happy. Go check out InfoCreek.com.
Stay with us, because up next, we're going to have Don Pickering, who's the founder and CEO of Momentic Systems at MomenticSystems.com, and he's going to talk about the future of email marketing. This is Web Talk Radio.
Last night, I had a dream that we went to Disneyland. Went on all the rides, didn't have to wait in line.
Welcome back to Web Talk Radio, webtalkradio.com, and my name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Dana. The question we're going to face in this segment is whether email-based marketing is still viable. Many experts say that email marketing is dying, and we wonder, is that really true? I mean, there are opportunities that may still exist with email marketing in the face of increased delivery interference on the part of spam.
And on the line with us, we have Don Pickering, who is the founder and CEO of Momentic Systems at MomenticSystems.com. They are an enterprise-level email-based promotions and marketing firm that uses client clustering of customer data to create very personalized and custom email messages that are driving results through very timely and relevant emails. Don, thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Now, the whole concept of email marketing over the past few years has been shunned and is a little bit dismissed as not very effective anymore because of spam. I don't necessarily think that's correct, but why don't you run through with us some of the tools that are needed that your company is really making available out there to help kind of make email marketing effective again?
Well, I think initially when email marketing became popular in the late 1990s, people were really excited because of the low relative cost in sending millions of emails for a relatively small amount of money, certainly as compared to direct mail. It's not the ultimate blast medium. It's not, you know, sending out a massive campaign or the same email to millions of people is not going to get you the types of response that you want as a marketer. So what people have learned over the last several years is how to use technology for more refined targeting and one-to-one marketing with their campaigns, and that helped to increase response rate and reduce people opting out of permission-based email relationships. So email today in a targeted, when you're emailing in a targeted format, can actually drive much higher results as compared to broadcast email or even direct mail campaigns.
Yeah, so really where problems is really centered around is that a lot of marketers have thought of email as almost like another ad or something like that they can just broadcast out, you know, kind of like radio or TV where they don't really know who their audience is. And that basically got them into trouble and really gave, I think, you know, some of the problems that we're seeing right now with spam. But it sounds like what you guys are doing is really is using tools to more effectively combine what databases and software to be able to make those messages more effective and more targeted, right?
Yep, that's right.
Let's talk a little bit about the whole delivery process that you guys go through and how you guys coalesce the information to create a message for one of your customers.
Sure. Well, the first thing that we do is really is compile customer information that companies might already have on their customers. This might include transaction history or information information that might be inside a customer relationship management system. Then through the course of campaignings or forms on websites, we add to that information, additional information that we glean on customers. So we really try and organize our efforts around detailed customer information. Once we have that information in a centralized database, we can segment and target customers based on like attributes or affinities. So let me give you an example of this. If an outdoor retailer is sending a general broadcast email to their customers, they may be sending a picnic basket promotion to a mountain climber or sending an ice climbing axe promotion to somebody who wants to go hiking with their kids. And ultimately, people in a business like that can be segmented based on sport affinity, the types of activities and sports that they like to engage in, or brand affinity, certain product or companies that they like and have a history of purchasing from. So just one level of segmentation through the alignment of emails with people's interests or products that they've shown a history of buying, purchasing, can increase your response rates by 100%. So we help to aggregate the information, perform the segmentation, and then actually organize email programs so that you can intersect people's interests with promotions and content or offers that match their interests or needs. Then the campaigns are deployed. We do all of the real-time tracking analysis and reporting and then make suggestions for further refinement or improvement of the campaigns moving forward.
Yeah, that's great.
It's a lot of hard work, but I know as a receiver of that kind of affinity-based email, it's a lot more pleasurable to read as well because it's what I like. And the masters of that, it seems like, or at least the early adopters, were Amazon.com because you could sign up for these alerts in areas, subject matters you're interested in, and they use that. But how hard is it? The onus is on your client, the business, to provide you with that information. Is that correct? Or do you help facilitate that?
Well, we operate as a full services agency, so we actually help customers locate that information and aggregate that in the customer database. For companies who are working with an ASP or an installed software solution, it's a much more difficult process, and they have to do that themselves.
So has spam made it more difficult for you guys to get your emails delivered and read by their customers? And, you know, a lot of the ISPs now are running really substantial filters and block more and more emails. Is that a big issue for you guys?
Spam is an issue for several reasons. I think most significant is just the noise that you have to get through in the customer's inbox.
Yeah.
In order for them to read your email. The second issue is around deliverability, and with the amount of spam filters that are out there today, and ISPs and large internet providers are actively working to block spam, and occasionally legitimate marketers' emails get blocked alongside the spam.
Exactly.
So we do a lot of work around deliverability and ensuring that our emails get through to the end customers. And we do this through active whitelisting, where we work with the AOLs and the Earthlinks of the world to make sure they know that we're a legitimate email marketing company and that emails which come from our IP addresses will pass through.
Mm-hmm.
We also are very careful to create emails and utilize techniques on certain subject line text and email formats that reduce the, quote, spamminess of emails so that they don't trigger a spam filter. So it's really a combination of efforts that we have to go through to mitigate the spam problem.
So is that whole thing like a moving target for you guys? Is it always changing the criterias that these spam filters are using to catch spam?
It is always changing, and it's something that we have a couple of people in our company who are really focused just on that effort alone.
Now, with the level of sophistication that you guys are doing with the databases and trying to come up with better profiles of customers to be able to send these marketing messages out, it almost seems like it's becoming more like what direct mail used to be, or is probably still today. You know, a very targeted type of thing. Are you seeing a lot of correlation now happening between email marketing and the old regular junk mail in my inbox kind of mail?
We're very much an extension of the direct marketing industry, but there's healthy differences between email and direct mail that allow us to actually be more cost effective.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, well, there's less printing, right?
So you don't have the paper, the distribution, intensive distribution costs. But we also are able to test our campaigns with a much shorter, more compressed optimization and testing cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So in direct mail, you might send out 1,000 mail pieces against your database to determine what offers or creative drives the highest response. But with direct mail, it takes you 3 to 6 weeks to get all of your results and then optimize your creative and your offers for the balance of your deployment. In email, we take that 3 to 4 week testing cycle and can compress that to 3 to 4 days. And at the same time, test across much more variables. We test for subject line, creative, offer, and numerous different aspects of the campaign.
So where do you see the whole email marketing going to over the next 2 or 3 years? Is it going to keep evolving into something different than what we're seeing now, or are you going to see more combination campaigns between online and offline with email? What are you seeing out there?
I think you'll see email increasingly become part of the mix of a broad range of marketing efforts.
Mm-hmm.
Email in and of itself is not the end-all be-all for marketing. It's generally a much better tool for retaining or cross-selling existing customers than it is in acquiring new customers.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
we see, and we're seeing already, increasingly integrated campaigns where you may launch with a direct mail piece, follow up with an email campaign, or vice versa. You'll probably see much more integrated campaign efforts across direct mail, email, telesales, and so forth. And I also think you'll see much higher level of targeting and personalization with the campaigns. Right now, only a small fraction of companies are using personalized emails to reach their audiences. I think you're still seeing a lot of broadcast emails, and ultimately the tools and technique for sending personalized campaigns will become easier and more cost effective for people to utilize. And I think the other issue that will impact email is spam. And hopefully there's some great solutions that are out there to mitigate the spam problem. And if they become implemented and the spam issue is mitigated, that you'll see an enormous increase in the use of targeted, effective email marketing. So I'm hopeful that we mitigate the spam problem and that this business can become more legitimate and effective than it is.
Sure. Well, now, do you see email getting mitigated and really kind of cut down? Because it still seems to be accelerating from what I'm hearing and getting worse.
I think it is accelerating. I think the one solution that I strongly endorse is the concept of a bonded sender program where email marketing companies will have to put up a bond, say $15,000 or $20,000 bond that if they are caught deploying flagrant spam, that the bond can be forfeited. I think if that were put in place, you would see great deals of spammers quit the business. If you're not bonded, then you would be subject to spam filtering or delayed delivery.
That's the first time I've heard that as a solution. I kind of like it. If companies can afford that kind of bond.
It's a good solution.
Well, now, who would enforce a bond like that? I'm sure it would still be probably a legal issue, wouldn't it?
I think it'd have to be a third party company that would be the bonding entity. I'm not sure exactly who that would be. I know Microsoft is supporting and researching an effort like that, but no official group has been named yet.
Oh, interesting.
Well, and it'd be very good for companies like you because that would require an online business to go to a third party email marketing company who could afford that. Because it wouldn't be like little mom and pop storefront would be able to obviously bond like that.
That's right. And really, the issue is people who are sending large volumes of email. If somebody's deploying, 500 piece email drops or 1,000 piece email drops, it'd probably not be as much of an issue. But large majority of the spam that's being sent today really comes from a relatively small number of spammers, as far as I understand.
So would you say that the big thing that you guys are doing is building more effective and more powerful software tools to be able to send more targeted messages to particular customers? I mean, are you guys more of a software company?
Well, we're a services company, much like an agency that is developing software and a platform for these services to be delivered on. And so as we develop more technology and tools, we then are increasingly empowering marketers and our clients to do more of the work themselves. So I think we're a services company that's really transitioning into a software company. And so I imagine in a short amount of time, we'll be installing end-to-end solutions inside the data centers of our clients. And we're already doing that, but we still are involved on a services basis to help companies with analytics and monitoring of some of their data and their campaigns.
What size of companies are you guys typically working with?
Well, typically for a company to engage with us, we like to see a minimum of 25,000, 30,000 email addresses to work with. The larger, of course, your database is, the more economies that can be had with doing segmentation and targeting like that. If companies are just blasting their emails indiscriminately, we're probably not the most cost-effective solution for them. There's lower-end ASPs and software that can be used to do that. But for companies who are looking to send targeted, personalized campaigns, generally, 25 to 30,000 emails or more is a pretty good base level to start with.
Don, I'm going to bring up the P word, privacy, because I want to give you a chance to sort of let everybody's mind sort of be at ease. But when I think of what you do and the fact that you have this sort of affinity-based, what people's interests are,
sure.
I don't have a problem with a marketing campaign knowing that information, because I'm not going to get the Viagra ads. I'm going to get the ones on backpacking, and that's great. So feel free to use my information, but some people don't feel that way. So you want to address the whole privacy issue, and who maintains that sort of description of a customer, you or the client?
Privacy is extremely important to us, and we hold ourselves to extremely high and rigid privacy standards. And we make sure that our clients adhere to that as well, or we will not work with them. First of all emails are sent to people who have requested or given permission to companies to send that email to them. So this is all permission-based email. We do not engage in any spam or allow our customers to. Mm-hmm. Secondly, the use of the data is specifically laid out in the privacy policies that our clients and that we mm-hmm. that we hold and that our clients hold. And any customer information is owned by our clients. Mm-hmm. We do not make use of any of their customer data. We keep it extremely discreet and separate from other customers' data. So the data is actually something that we are very careful with and are very clear with our customers that it's their data. We don't own mm-hmm. that. We don't make any use of that. And we don't allow them to use it in any inappropriate or ineffective ways.
For folks that don't have that 25,000 name database to be able to work with you guys, what are some tips that you can give to like maybe a webmaster that maybe has got maybe a few thousand names on how they can put together kind of a better, more effective email marketing campaign to their customers? Is there any tips you can give us?
Well, I think first things first is it any touch point that you have with the customer, be sure and ask for an email address and ask for permission to send them emails. And that's the most important thing. If you don't have explicit permission, you should not be emailing your mm-hmm. customers. Mm-hmm. Secondly, you don't email them too frequently. Mm-hmm. I think no more than once or twice a month. Anything more than twice a month is generally too frequent. Mm-hmm. You'll see people opt out.
Okay.
And third, when you email customers and particularly if it's a marketing related email, try if you can have a level of personalization. That's great. If not, keep the message simple. And clean, and don't send too many offers or too many messages in one communication because people generally will get lost in that and not respond at all.
Mm-hmm.
But the more you can increase the relevancy of it, the higher likelihood that you'll have people responding to it and not opting out of your relationship with them.
So what are some of the biggest challenges and opportunities that you see for email marketing over the next year or so? Just in the last minute here of our show.
Well, I think the challenges and the opportunities are in mitigating the spam issue. Mm-hmm. And I think that's most significant. I also think that bringing email marketing and more personalized email marketing to smaller and mid-sized companies is going to help people across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And the clients that we work with, we've seen fantastic results from the programs that we do, response rates oftentimes in the double digits.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can bring that in a cost-effective fashion to more companies, then I think more companies can benefit from that. So I think those are the two issues for me.
Okay. Now, is streaming media being used more and more in the emails that you guys are using, or Flash and those kind of tools? Are you finding those to be effective?
We are using Flash and streaming media. It's generally not effective if you're selling products so much as if you're trying to communicate a message or a story to people. Obviously, you are seeing a lot, as broadband proliferates and becomes more common, you'll see increasing use of Flash and streaming media. But for the narrowband users who receive it, it can be quite annoying. So really, unless you can segment your broadband from your dial-up users, it's generally not a good idea to deploy to your entire list.
Okay.
So that people's inboxes aren't being clogged with it.
Don, we're coming to the end of our time, but I wanted to actually find out about your illustrative career. You are really a serial startup bootstrapper.
Mm-hmm.
You've managed quite a few successful companies. Why don't you run down a list of what you've done and what you have currently running out there besides this?
Well, this Mimetic Systems is my third business. I started my first company in 1995. It was called Cosmix Web Design, and we built high-end websites for Boeing and Microsoft and
wow.
Gateway and a host of companies.
Early days.
In the early days, yeah. And we also built custom internet software for companies. And I sold Cosmix in 1997 to U.S. Web mm-hmm. and was managing partner with U.S. Web up until May of 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And then in fall of 98, I started an internet retail company, or was co-founder of an internet retail company called Alltrek.com, which is an outdoor gear and mm-hmm. equipment online retailer that competes with REI.
Mm-hmm.
And Alltrek is still going strong,
yeah.
growing at over 40 to 50% a year.
Wow, that's great. I know, that's a great site.
And now you can see why I gave the example earlier of the backpacker.
Oh, I
That's right.
And then I left AllTrek in March of 2000 to pursue Mimetic Systems, and I launched this company in the fall of 2000 and have been working on it ever since.
But I know you have two or three on a napkin somewhere that you're
yeah,
ready to
right.
launch.
Yeah, I always do.
What's the next big project, right? Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, I'm certainly committed to this, and sure. I'm really excited about the prospects for Mimetic Systems and stay committed to this. But I think I'm personally interested in starting a company in the energy arena.
Wow.
I think given the cost and dependency on oil, the economics for alternative energies and fuels are coming into play, and so I think at some point that will be my next business.
All right. I knew I liked you. That Seattleite in you, the green
right.
guy. You know?
Yeah.
That's right, especially with oil reaching, what, $50 a barrel here this past week.
That's right.
It's rising to the forefront as an important issue, no question. Well, Don, it was great speaking with you and having you on the phone.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
And learning more about your company and companies. So good luck out there, and we appreciate it.
All right, thank you very much.
We've been having a conversation with Don Pickering. He's founder and CEO of Mimetic Systems at mimeticsystems.com.
Stay with us, because up next, we're going to have Greg Reneker, founder and chief technology officer for NewsGator at newsgator.com. NewsGator is what is called an RSS newsreader software program that installs into Microsoft Outlook. This is Web Talk Radio.
Dude, check it out. Listen to Web Talk. Totally for sure. Your old man's not here.
Welcome back. This is Web Talk Radio at webtalkradio.com, and go check out our new website. My name is Rob Greenlee.
And I'm Dana Greenlee. On the line joining us, we have Greg Reneker. He's the founder and chief technology officer for NewsGator. It's at newsgator.com. What they are is an RSS newsreader software. RSS stands for Real Simple Syndication. And their software installs in your Microsoft Outlook and lets you receive and read RSS news feeds from web blogs and other online content sites all over the internet just by going into your Outlook and reading the NewsGator newsreader online.
Greg, thanks for joining us on the show.
Oh, glad to be here, Rob.
Hey, for those that aren't really as familiar with RSS and content syndication and newsreaders and all the things that are going on in that area, why don't you kind of explain what NewsGator does and how it all works?
Well, so that all kind of comes back to RSS feeds. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of an RSS feed is it's another way to publish your content on your website. So, you know, most websites publish in HTML where you can go take your web browser and go read the content there. And then a lot of sites now are also publishing in parallel in a format called RSS, mm-hmm. which is a XML data format, and it essentially syndicates that content to any other tools or websites that want to pick up that content. And NewsGator is actually one of those tools that can pick up these syndicated news feeds and do interesting things with it. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we can pull this content into Outlook, or we can send it to your mobile device, or even send it to your TV if you're running Windows Media Center Edition.
So why do you think that we're seeing this whole RSS thing become so popular now? Is it because people don't want to go to websites or web pages anymore, or they want to have stuff delivered to them now, or is this a much bigger trend that we're seeing of why it's becoming so popular?
You know, I think it's a really big trend. But, you know, imagine for a second, suppose you have like 100 different websites that you're interested in, and you know, you could go visit those every day just to see if something's changed, but, you know, I know I don't have time to do that, and
sure.
I'm guessing you guys don't either.
Yeah. Please still go visit our website at webtalkradio.com, though.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
So what the RSS feeds can do for you is imagine if instead of having to go visit those 100 websites, they can actually notify you when something's been changed, and you mm-hmm. can just go look at those. And then imagine even further, if instead of just notifying you that something changed, imagine if they sent you the content that's new on the website so you didn't actually mm-hmm. have to go back there and read it on the website.
Yeah. Well, there's
very, very handy. So it lets you keep up with, you know, even hundreds of websites very, very quickly because you're only looking at the content that's changed since you last saw it, mm-hmm. and it's all coming to you in one place, such as Outlook, for example, where you can sort and group the content in the same way you're used to doing it for email.
Mm-hmm.
Great. More reason to live in my Outlook.
Exactly.
Well, Greg, you invented it. You're founder, you're CTO, but you're also the president of the company until you just recently. Mm-hmm. And so where do you fit in on the hierarchy of the development of RSS? Did NewsGator come in at the very beginning? How'd y'all fit in?
You know, RSS has really been around for several years. It was co-developed by Userland and Netscape, I believe,
mm-hmm.
Quite some time ago. Really, though, NewsGator was first came out the beginning of last year, and that was really kind of the time, actually it was a little bit after the time, where weblogs were really starting to get popular.
Mm-hmm.
So tools like Blogger and Radio Userland were really becoming very, very popular. Weblogs themselves were slowly starting to break out kind of into, out of the techie world into sort of mainstream where people were hearing about them.
Mm-hmm.
RSS was kind of really starting to come into its own about that time, and that's when NewsGator came out. Since then, it's just been a dramatic growth.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not a week goes by when some major publisher isn't announcing that they're supporting RSS in some form.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, some of the recent ones I can think of are like Time Magazine or Reuters, for example, have both made announcements recently about supporting RSS on their websites. It's really becoming popular, and really mainstream publishers are starting to support it now.
So are you seeing any kind of stats at all about how many users are actually getting RSS feeds now and those kind of stats? Is there anybody tracking that right now?
I don't know of any great data that's so I know our own data, of course, but we
sure.
don't release that.
Okay.
The other data I've seen is just kind of more numbers about how many weblogs there are
mm-hmm.
and how fast that's growing. So kind of the numbers we see in that neighborhood are, I think 6 to 7 million weblogs
mm-hmm.
growing by, somewhere around 10,000 a day.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, how many, what percentage of those are, teenage girls talking about high school, but,
Yeah, you have to wonder, but, there's also, executives of companies.
Yes.
And
the whole breakout with the political bloggers and, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A great example there.
Well, and plus this whole RSS thing and blogs and everything are being used by a lot of different companies, a lot of different entities for a lot of different purposes. And certainly, that growth you were just talking about, the 10,000 a day, could be stuff for the full spectrum of content online, I'm sure. And it's not just all about the big media companies, I'm sure. Are you guys seeing your software being used for very specific type feed?
Yeah, you know what we're seeing a lot of that was actually a little bit surprising because it took us a little off guard
mm-hmm.
is the amazing enterprise demand for this stuff.
Mm.
So companies are using RSS and using tools like NewsGator for Outlook for internal uses.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll have internal weblogs or they'll be generating RSS feeds directly out of their business systems or replacing internal mailing lists, things like that with RSS. And tools like Outlook, that is already on every employee's desktop and every employee already knows how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
By integrating RSS into tools like that, they're seeing this huge productivity gain. It kind of took us by surprise. We wrote a case study on one particular customer who started actually using NewsGator for Outlook from a standalone RSS reader product early in 2003.
Uh-huh.
And the adoption rate went up by 7 times when they switched to an Outlook-based product from the standalone product. And it was like people started to, before with the standalone product, they'd see these feeds and say, oh my gosh, this is an extra thing I have to do every
yeah.
day. I don't have time
mm-hmm.
for this.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Outlook thing, it's just more information coming into the tool they use every day.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the integration really enabled the part that was really cool, which was, the fact that RSS is delivering all this information in a way that hasn't gotten out and notified people that it was available before. And it's really been great productivity gains for these companies.
Well, that's what I see is so spectacular about NewsGator is it isn't a separate application. You feel like really comfortable with it. It's not scary. And when you're using terms like RSS, most people go, ooh, that sounds like I can't comprehend
yeah.
it.
It sounds very complicated, so I think it needs to get a little simpler, too.
I'm interested that you've chosen Outlook or Outlook chose you. I'm just interested in what Microsoft must think of NewsGator because of that.
Yeah, we actually have great relationships with Microsoft. They're obviously one of our, partners building into their products and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Also having built, say, the Media Center edition, which runs inside Windows Media Center.
That's cool.
it's been great with them. You know, we have a co-marketing arrangement in the Online Spotlight and Media Center. It's just been a ton of interest in those sorts of products.
So they're all totally on board with you. You guys have shake hands and you're friends? Is that proprietary?
No. So we're friends as, you know, you can never really tell what a company like Microsoft is thinking.
Yeah, that's
but,
true.
But I would definitely consider us friends, yeah.
Well, and I'm sure that there's probably a little bit of worry on your part that they could potentially build some of these capabilities into their next generation Outlook. I would think you're a little nervous about that, but I suppose there's some opportunities, I guess, that still would exist as you look out in the future. And that's kind of where I'd like to go here a little bit, is just find out what's your vision of what the NewsGator product could become and where you guys see it moving to over the next, like, maybe a couple of years.
Right. So I think, there's lots of fronts there, some of which I can talk about and some of
sure.
which I can't.
Okay.
On the online side, we're absolutely focused on making our online system a little bit easier to use. You know, NewsGator started out with a great name for the Outlook product and kind of became synonymous with, you know, reading RSS and Outlook.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually been a little bit of a problem since then, because after we launched our online platform, our name is still synonymous with RSS and Outlook.
Mm-hmm.
But and yet we have this whole separate product line. So anyway, we're going to put a quick stop to that problem soon by, you know, kind of redesigning our online site, making it much easier and more obvious and easier to use. And at the same time, making our Outlook product a little bit easier to use. The big problem is people start using these kinds of tools and they want to find more feeds.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, with most of the tools on the market today, it's not, yeah, you know, there's various approaches. We use wizards. Other people have big pages of feeds you can pick from.
Yeah.
But it's not really as easy as it ought to be.
No, it is difficult to find feeds, and it's also been difficult to get the feeds into your reader or understand that whole process, because
right.
people just don't grasp that whole process. So you just cut and paste it in, but somehow
exactly.
that seems too simple for such a complex thing like really simple syndication.
Right. Well, and, you know, in our Outlook product and in our online one too, actually, we Yeah, we have extensions where you can right-click on a feed in Internet Explorer, and there's a menu item there that says subscribe in NewsGator.
Mm-hmm.
We've made, you know, some sorts of things like that to help make it easier, and there's more things kind of planned on the horizon. Also, you know, another area we're moving into that I personally find very, very interesting is the whole idea of audio and video inside mm-hmm. of these feeds.
Yeah,
you know, with the Media Center edition in particular, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, when I watch a video on my computer, it holds my attention for a little while, but, you know, it's in this little 2x2 window up in the corner of the screen, and, you know, I watch it for a little while, but then I get distracted and do something else.
Nothing like watching on a big screen, flat screen, 42-inch display, right?
It's so true. When you have the remote control in one hand and a beer in the other and you're sitting on your easy chair, you know, and that's really what the Media Center kind of yeah. brings to light, is, you know, a whole different way to consume this content.
Yeah.
And we've gotten great, great feedback from users as to, you know, the whole Media Center edition for RSS just makes so much sense. We love this. We need more content. And that's really the thing. You know, there's not a ton of video content published in RSS today.
No, there isn't. There's actually very little, and it seems like that the audio is just really starting to hit a little bit of popularity here over, at least in the last couple of weeks anyway.
Exactly. So we're really looking into things that we can do to sort of help that along, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so pushing along more content through those kinds of channels, which we find very exciting. And then also, you know, the enterprise space, there's lots of interesting things going on there. There's a huge demand for our products there. So, you know, obviously that's a very interesting area for us.
We're having a conversation with Greg Rinneker. He's the founder and CTO for NewsGator.com. More with Greg and RSS in a minute. You're listening to Web Talk Radio.
You're back with Web Talk at webtalkradio.com, and my name is Rob Greenlee.
This is Dana, and joining us still is Greg Rinneker, the founder and CEO of NewsGator at newsgator.com.
Yeah, and the whole the audio and video piece that we were just talking about, it seems like that the technology, at least from my understanding of the technology, it could work very well for almost like a subscription service, almost like a channel, like a cable TV channel almost. It mm-hmm. could have that same kind of functionality where it feeds content on a scheduled basis or on a rotating basis to a player or something like that, and it would continually keep playing. It, you know, it's really fascinating to really think about what the potential of this. I know a lot of people have talked about how RSS could even replace email as a delivery tool. So what's your thought on some of those type of things, kind of moving this into a much more advanced capability?
Right. On the cable side, it's interesting. We had a customer who, you know, he had a video camera. He was putting video stuff in his feeds,
mm-hmm.
and he posted something on his blog saying, I really feel like this is kind of my own personal TV channel.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And it was, I mean, it was interesting. We had never thought of it that way, but, you know, from that perspective, it was really true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with customers watching it on Media Center and he's recording it, I mean, it was really neat. And it's kind of, you know, it's kind of a step along the way to what you were talking about.
Do you actually go out and pursue content developers, you know, like this guy with the video, or do they just approach you? How does that, how do you get this together?
Both, actually. Mm-hmm. The ones that we approach tend to be ones that we want to do premium content relationships with.
Mm-hmm.
So part of our online platform is actually what we call premium content. And the idea there is it's content that we've licensed from publishers to make available to our subscribers. You know, some of the things we've licensed there are anything from InfoWorld to comic strips that would appear in your Sunday paper, like Garfield and Doonesbury and whatnot, to independent publishers like Ask the Builder and Gene Mage, who does leadership development presentations and things like that.
So I understand we can get Dear Abby now delivered to us. That's great.
That's actually one of our premium content channels.
That's great.
So is your software going to plug into other applications in the future? Are you guys thinking about other applications besides Outlook, like maybe Thunderbird from Mozilla and Eudora and maybe even some other Microsoft applications?
So definitely we're thinking about that kind of thing. Thunderbird actually has some RSS stuff built in.
Mm-hmm.
For Eudora and Entourage and other email clients, the POP edition or the email edition that we have as part of our online platform works mm-hmm. really well.
Mm-hmm.
For those kind of email clients. But as far as, you know, more generically, you know, applications that either, or building things that integrate with existing applications or
mm-hmm.
building applications that work on specific devices is definitely very interesting to us.
Sure.
Either from a partnership perspective where we'll find someone who we think's just done an awesome job building something, we want them to build it for us or label that as mm-hmm. our product or something like that. But there's definitely lots of possibilities
sure.
there with integration into third-party products and platforms.
So is it totally out of the woods that you guys would consider building a standalone application for your software, or is that kind of going the opposite direction as far as moving forward?
You know, so we've considered it, of course. I mean, if you look at our footprint, we have a client for Outlook, and we've got clients for mobile devices and Media Center and other email clients.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing we don't have is a standalone, you know, desktop application.
Yeah.
What we've chosen to do now, for now anyways, is kind of find some of the industry-leading ones and partner with them
mm-hmm.
to work with our online system.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, just today we announced that we've partnered with FeedDemon, which is one of the leading desktop aggregators for Windows,
mm-hmm.
to support feed synchronization through our online system. So very, very exciting for us. I mean, you know, it's about building more subscribers for our online system and
mm-hmm.
exposing them to the great other products and services that we have there mm-hmm. while providing lots of extra value for them while they're already using their tool of choice, which is FeedDemon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you just came out along with that, on the heels of that, two other announcements. Do you want to share those with us?
Sure. The second one, so the first one was with FeedDemon. Mm-hmm. The second announcement was with Moreover, where we've chosen Moreover to provide us news content for our custom search feeds. So part of what we do in NewsGator Online Services is what we call custom search feeds. And the idea there is you can put in a keyword or a URL, and we'll return content to you that mentions that keyword. So, for example, I personally have a feed that searches for the word NewsGator, and I find out typically within an hour or so, whenever that word is mentioned on someone's weblog or on commercial news sites or even an SEC filing.
Sure, because Moreover covers all the, you know, LA Times, New York Times.
Yeah, they cover
Post.
A whole bunch of segments.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that really gives us a hook into all that additional content to make sure we're returning that content to our users as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really excited about that.
That is good.
And then the third partnership we announced today was with Six Apart, who's really one of the leading vendors of weblog publishing tools. They build
mm-hmm.
Six Apart. Sorry. They build TypePad and Movable Type. And really what we've seen is both of us, Six Apart and NewsGator, both have seen a huge enterprise demand for our products. So on Six Apart's side, it's Movable Type for companies wanting to do internal publishing.
Mm-hmm.
On our side, it's NewsGator for Outlook for wanting to consume RSS content on individual employees' desktops.
Mm-hmm.
And really our products are so complementary that when we go into, you know, go into a corporation and we start talking about them, we're typically asked, well, what about the publishing side? You know, what do you guys have there? And this gives us the opportunity to say, well, you know, we work with Six Apart. Here's what we can do for you together. Oh. And we're also going to release some code to make it really easy to publish new content from NewsGator straight into Movable Type or TypePad.
Oh, that's great.
So we're pretty excited about that as
well.
Yeah,
I would think so.
Yeah.
One of the other things I want to ask you about is, you know, we've talked a little bit about content and you guys are kind of pulling content together. Why don't you explain to us a little bit more about the premium channels that you guys have and what you see happening to that over time?
Yeah, so right now it's content that isn't generally available for free in the mm-hmm. format that we give it that we have it in.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, with the comics, they're generally not available via RSS. With InfoWorld, their content obviously is published on their website and on their excerpt-only RSS feeds, whereas our feeds are providing full article content. It's all about, and the full article content is handy for things like mobile devices or media center, where you really can't click through a link to get to the web page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no great experience there. So by providing the full article content, it actually becomes useful for our users. So it's really about adding value by licensing this content and delivering it through our distribution channel to the users who can really use it or who just, you know, who want to use it, like Dear Abby and that kind of thing.
Greg, a personal question here as we wind up. I just wanted to, if you wanted to share with us, what kind of content do you have coming into your personal NewsGator? Just the clean stuff, okay?
You're killing me. You know, lots and lots of weblogs. I read weblogs from, you know, I'm a developer at heart, actually, a software developer. So I read lots of, you know, kind of techie weblogs.
Mm-hmm.
And,
geeky,
you know,
stuff,
of course,
yeah.
The weblogs from some of our competitors and partners and that kind of thing. Sure. I also read, you know, Garfield and, you know, a few of the comics.
You need a balance, Greg.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to laugh now and then, right?
Any particular blogger that you would recommend?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. I wouldn't even know where to start.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
You know, Robert Scoble at Microsoft, if you're a techie,
yeah.
He's a great evangelist at Microsoft and talks,
Robert's,
you know, pretty much from his heart about Microsoft products, which is great. There's Hallie's Comment by Hallie Suit, who writes about all kinds of different things.
Mm-hmm.
She's fun. Those are a couple of my favorites.
Thanks. That's good.
Now, you guys are doing a little contest to change your name, from what I understand. Why don't you explain to us how our listeners might be able to input some of their ideas into the new name for NewsGator?
Yeah. So, you know, due to some kind of negative connotations with the whole Gator, you know, spyware company, we're mm-hmm. Considering changing our name from NewsGator to something else.
Yeah.
And we're actually giving away a Windows Media Center computer and a full year of service to our online platform, which includes NewsGator Media Center Edition.
Mm.
So really, really cool. We're excited about it.
Yeah, I want to sign up for that. So I'm going to send you some ideas, too.
Great. And to send ideas, you can either go to my weblog if you happen to find it, or you can just send some email to info@newsgator.com.
Okay.
And tell
That's
us about
great.
Your weblog, you know, your weblog, how we can find that.
Yeah. Gosh. You either search Google for Greg Reinecker.
Okay.
Reinacker. Or I could give you the whole URL, but it's kind of long and painful.
Well, we'll link to it from the front page of our site. So everybody who's interested, you might get a lot of readers suddenly.
Well, yeah, and I think it's also on your website at newsgator.com. If you click on feed search, aren't you listed there as one of the weblogs, one of the top weblogs there, I guess, with Chris Perillo, I see.
Yeah, you know, I bet I am. You're probably right.
They can subscribe right there if they download your software, right?
They could.
Yeah.
That's right.
Which is at www.newsgator.com.
Yeah, that's... Well, Greg, it was great speaking with you on the show.
Great speaking with you. Thanks for having me on.
It's always fun talking to you, so we appreciate it. We wish you guys the most luck with NewsGator, and we hope that you guys find a terrific new name.
I hope so, too.
Okay.
We've been speaking with Greg Reinecker. He's the founder and CTO of NewsGator at newsgator.com. Soon to have a new name.
Yeah, and thank you for joining us this week, and we look forward to have you listening to the show next week. So stay in contact with us by going to webtalkradio.com and check out our blog and our discussion board and post your comments and thoughts. We want to hear from you, so send us an email at rob@webtalkradio.com, and we'll see you around the net.
Thank you for downloading the Web Talk Guys. Bookmark us now for next week. Same Web Talk Guys time, same Web Talk Guys channel.